Thursday day edition of the Dunktown Basketball Podcast. We waited a little bit to release this one because we wanted to let the Twitter NBA show sit on its own. And if you haven't watched that yet, we did a post-game show that should still be relevant, just like Dunktown is. Pretty similar content to the gamers that we do on Dunktown. So you can go back and check that out. Just go to my Periscope profile, Nate Duncan NBA. We're sponsored today by the June Oven, a revolutionary oven with a camera that automatically recognizes the food that you put in it and cooks it perfectly for you. Find out more about them at JuneOven.com, and you can get $100 off that by entering the Capspace code. And then Betterment as well. Learn more about them at Betterment.com/Capspace, automated investing with lower fees than traditional financial services. So Danny, we've been teasing this for a while. Want to talk about some of these teams that have been surprises and see whether we believe it's going to continue, maybe talk about some revised expectations compared to the preseason, and maybe also just give a number grade to how sustainable we think their performance thus far is.
Do you want to start with the LA teams? Because I feel like that in some ways is the biggest story so far this year in terms of surprises.
Yeah, the Lakers are interesting. Now, and one of the things that I found really for all these teams that I've looked at, not very many of them have just like gotten lucky in close games, and just like you have to dig deeper than just, oh, hey, they have a bad point differential and they got lucky in close games, so they're going to regress. That one team that was like that was Oklahoma City, and they already have regressed some. So yeah, I think the Lakers, if you look at least at their surface fundamentals, they have played up to about the level of the 7-5 team that they are so far.
Yeah, and so then the question is, will they sustain that level of quality? And for me, the bigger question, though you can argue both sides, is on the defensive end. They're 19th right now, and 19th is not great, but it is distinctly better than I expected. You know, they were horrendous last year, and it was unreasonable to expect that again, but it does feel like they're kind of playing above their heads a little bit on that end. Their switching system is working very well. So I don't think they're going to be, you know, like 28th or 29th, but if they fall to, let's say, you know, somewhere around 24, 25, that takes away a little bit of their margin because the Lakers are winning a lot of these games very close.
And I think that probably will happen because they are giving up a ton of threes, a ton of shots at the rim, really high field goal percentage at the rim. I think they have the worst defensive field goal percentage at the rim, and they're in the top two or three in terms of the number of shots that they're giving up at the rim. And then they're also forcing the lowest percentage of shots from mid-range. And their opponent three-point shooting has started to regress back towards the mean. It had been awesome for part of the year, but I think that's going to get a little bit worse as well. And they're giving up a lot of threes. So I think the defense feels more to me like low to mid-20s than the 19th that they've been before. But they have actually, you know, they've been better than 500 so far. So even if that regresses, if they can keep up the offense, they could be around a 500 team. Can the offense maintain?
They can get close. Ninth is a little bit rosy considering, you know, they do have a lot of offensive talent. But at the same point, I talked about this a little bit when we've discussed the Lakers before. D'Angelo Russell still isn't having a great season. Julius Randle is blowing away his expectations. I've liked what Ingram has shown so far. But they do have a little bit of kind of offsetting improvement there. But if I were to kind of classify this team overall, I'd say they're more around league average. So again, that if they can get to, let's say, around 15th in offense and 20 something in defense, that is a pretty that's a much better team than I think we expected them to be. And that would be an unambiguous success of a season. And you could make a very credible argument that they'll be a little bit better than that. And so then you're, you know, probably not in the playoffs, but you're in the mid 30s probably.
There are some reasons to think they'll regress on offense as well. They're shooting 42% for mid range. That's not crazy unsustainable, but better than what the league average is. 66% in the restricted area, second best in the league to Golden State, who's shooting a ridiculous 71% in the restricted area. And so I think that, again, you know, guys like Randall, Lou Williams, they're shooting like 80% from the restricted area. Like, that's just not going to continue. But I think they can continue to be good there, especially if you look at the system that Luke Walton is running, and they've really have found some great ways to get guys like Randall to succeed. For example, when the Nets were trapping on the pick and roll with D'Angelo Russell, who was on fire from three yesterday, he hit seven threes against the Nets, they had Julius Randall on the weak side wing. And usually that would just mean, well, fine, we're just going to crash into the paint to stop the roll man. But they actually then had Randall cutting into the paint from the backside of the elbow. He got a few of his buckets and assists off of that. Just some really nice action, just doing the basics offensively that Luke Walton has already been able to Batista. Another reason I believe in these guys maybe a little more is they have some solid depth. They have their young guys. They've got Deng, Mozgov, Ingram coming off the bench. Tarik Black has been fine as a backup center, Larry Nance. So if they get an injury or two, I think they can withstand it. Now, they don't have anything even close to a star, much less a superstar. So that's an issue as well. But that also makes them a little bit harder to prepare for because you're not trying to just stop one guy. I think their offense is going to regress a little bit. I think they're going to go down to maybe like 15th in offense, which is still, again, considering where they were last year, is an outstanding improvement. So I think that this is kind of the 15th best offense, 22nd to 25th best defense when it's all said and done. But they already have banked 7 wins. So I could see them getting, if I had to revise my expectations for them, I would be in the 32-33 win range. But the longer they keep this up, the more you have to revise it upward. I think you still have to account some for preseason expectations, despite the fact that obviously losing Byron Scott and Kobe has helped immensely.
Yeah, and so you have to balance all of those things together. And also, they haven't played, they played the Warriors twice, including that weird aberrational game, but it feels like they're going to face some greater adversity for a lot of different reasons. But I'm still optimistic too. I mean, you see the fundamentals with this team are the type of thing, a team that can outperform their expectations. And so whether they do that by a little or they do that by a lot, it's still quite encouraging.
Yeah, and everyone just seems so happy to have a real team again too, and with not all this Kobe stuff and Byron Scott cracking the whip and all that. I mean, so I would say, if I'm going to give it a rating out of 10 for sustainability, I'd say a 5. I'm willing to go basically halfway between where we thought they would be at the start of the year and how they've played so far. I think that'll be like kind of my new baseline for them. And so that's in the low 30s. I thought they'd be under 24 wins. So I'm certainly revising that expectation upward quite significantly.
I'll go with a 6. I think it's a little bit closer than that. Also because there is a distinct chance that they stay closer to these levels on both. It's not like they're world beaters right now. And I think that, you know, there's a chance that they can keep this up for at least a few months, and that's all they need.
So we're going to move on momentarily, but I want to tell you first about a revolutionary new product. We've had a couple startups on here now. That I got in touch with these to a friend of mine who's an investor, and the June oven is really spectacular. And if you just imagine an oven that can cook whatever you put in it, recognize it automatically, and cook it perfectly every time, that's what the June oven is. You put in a piece of steak, there's a thermometer that attaches to the oven. It'll cook it to the exact temperature that you want. It can broil, it can bake, it can roast, it can do really any type of cooking that you want it to do. And with all these multi-step programs that are already programmed in, it's going to cook it perfectly every time. And because it has such amazing hardware with this built-in camera and all the different heating elements and sensors, it keeps getting smarter the longer you have it and the larger the community grows. All of that information that people are cooking gets sent to your oven, and it'll recognize more stuff, come up with more programs, more recipes for you to use. So you don't have to worry about it becoming obsolete. If you want to learn more about it, juneoven.com is their website. Normally $14.95, they're on pre-orders, should be shipping within a month or two. You can get $100 off using that familiar CapSpace code, which is easy to remember because we talk about it all the time on the program. And as far as I know, this is the only way that consumers can get that $100 off for the June oven. So juneoven.com, use that CapSpace code. You can get $100 off. Seriously, just go to the website, juneoven.com, check out the product. I think you'll be as amazed by it as I am. And it's just one of those what an age we live in type of things where this is really something out of a sci-fi movie. And now it's here. juneoven.com, promo code CapSpace. Who we got next here?
Let's do the Clippers. I mean, so the Clippers, the other team that shares Staples Center, the big thing there is beyond being the league's best team so far this year has been that they have the league's best defense.
Yeah, their starting lineup always kills people. It's really been killing people. I think all of their starters have a net rating over 20 right now. And we have been critical of Doc Rivers for not staggering in the past. Maybe that'll come to be an issue later. But when your starting unit is over 20 points per 100 and you're ending games in the first quarter when you're at home before you even have to bring the reserves in, probably no need to stagger at that point. And then that defense you mentioned has been amazing. I think, you know, Blake Griffin has been defending much better. They've been switching more, taking advantage of his mobility because, and I really like that since he's not someone who's a great rim protector if he's hanging back in the pick and roll playing traditional pick and roll defense, but he does have above average mobility for his size. And if he switches on to players, they're not going to be able to post him up or anything because he's too strong. So that's been working really well. Their execution has been outstanding. What about it, though, do you not buy so far? I mean, they can't continue to give up 90 points per 100 possessions or whatever it's been. I mean, the Spurs were unbelievable last year, one of the best defenses ever, and they're at 95, 96. So it's the defense has to regress. But other than that, than just that general statement, is there anything else that pops out to you here as something that's going to get worse?
They're forcing a lot of turnovers. That's something that I've seen that also helps generate some of their offense, though being fifth in offense is not an aberration for them. I believe they were top five last year and number one the year before. But that, you know, that can be such a kind of a finicky thing depending on your system. And also just the overall nature of how great their bench is played. You know, I think that's something that will tone down. And so generally what you see with something like this is a regression to the mean just because they're outperforming everything. And so even doing well is going to be a step back from where they are.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I mean, they have cleaned up their defensive rebounding from last year. That's helped. They also are giving up just crazy low shooting on mid-rangers. Teams are shooting 29% from mid-range. League average is about 40. And part of that is because they're doing well to contest. They're not giving up open mid-rangers. But nonetheless, like, no team is going to give up 29% mid-range shooting over a full season. Three-point shooting as well. Opponents are shooting 34%. So not anything too crazy there. I also think, too, that their bench defense has been completely ridiculous so far. And when you look at the defenders that they have on the bench, I don't know if that can continue. If you're playing guys like Crawford and Mo Spates together, Austin Rivers has good tools. He's improved. Ray Felton is not some great defender. You're not going to continue to defend at that crazy rate with the bench. That's going to drop, I think, back to average. I think the starters can do a little bit better there. And also for the offense, I think that fifth in offense is maybe even underselling this team's potential a little bit. But, you know, I'm not sure how efficient Blake Griffin can be anymore. He's relying a lot on his mid-ranger.
Playing Rook too. You know, like that's a trade-off that they haven't faced the negative of. And also something that you have to consider.
Yeah, he's actually scored well in some of these games, and I don't think that's going
to
continue.
Something you have to consider also is that when a team has been this good defensively, that gives you more offensive opportunities. So if they go back, let's say even if they go back to being a very good to elite defense, that's going to take away a few easy buckets a game.
That's true. Also, Chris Paul has like a 33.5 PER right now. That's not going to continue. Although I think I refuse to predict the Chris Paul regression that I'd been predicting for the past couple of years this year. And that's looking smart so far, but he can't quite keep up that level of play.
If he did, do you think he'd deserve the MVP?
Well, of course. I mean, if he's that good over a full season, and they keep playing this way, of course he would.
Yeah, because like that's the difference between them and like the Rockets and the Thunder and all this is he's doing it in a team concept and the team is kicking ass.
So, all right, they are 10-1 right now. I think I had them as they had like 53.5 wins. I had them as the under. That's obviously going to be wrong, I think, unless they suffer some significant injury concerns, of which they haven't yet either. This is a team that's been hit with injuries at times, and they've been perfectly healthy, basically, other than like Paul Pierce and Wes Johnson, who are not major parts of the operation at this point. Where do you see them finishing now in terms of wins based on this 10-1 start where they've just had one of the best starts in NBA history?
Probably, let's say, low 60s. I think they can certainly be that good. They've been playing better than that, as crazy as it sounds, but injuries and regression will take them down a little bit. So they'll be in that mix. I mean, there's certainly reason to believe that they'll push the Warriors for the best record in the Western Conference, at least assuming relatively equal health. So I'd say that. And in terms of repeatability, I'm going to say it's a 7.5 because I think they can do a lot of what they've been doing. Like, I don't think structurally that, other than the bench ridiculousness, that a lot of this cannot continue. But you never expect a team to keep this going at this rate because nobody ever has.
Yeah, and it's not even like last year's Warriors where they were shooting incredibly well and these were great shooters. I mean, that defense and some of those fundamentals, especially that mid-range shooting, and they're doing a great job of forcing mid-rangers. Like, the defense has been great, don't get me wrong. But again, I mean, they don't have... Luke Richard and Bob Mute has been pretty solid. And he looks like he's in much better shape this year. But still, this is not a team that has like absolutely elite defensive personnel quite yet. And so I think it's keeping that up is going to be tough. I do think they're going to get into the low 60s. I think this is going to be the year for that, unless they suffer some injury concerns, which of course could always happen with this group. And they might even go higher than that because, as you noted, they're going to be fighting with the Warriors for home court. I think home court is going to be pretty important if these two teams match up in the playoffs. So yeah, I would say, you know, around 6 or 7 is where I'd say. I mean, I'm closer to, you know, they're playing at like a 75 win pace now or whatever it is. So, I mean, if you wanted to say that 10 is they're going to continue it and 1 is they're not going to continue it at all, I think they'll be, you know, in the low 60s is probably closer to a 7 there for me.
Yeah, it's certainly great to see a team kind of that we've wondered how good they could be at their best, and just to see it, even if it is just for 11 games, like to get that reminder of, oh yeah, this team can be this good.
Yeah, it's really great at this point in the season when nobody has gotten the inevitable injuries from the season that is far too long and too dense, perhaps more accurately. I think that's a better way to talk about it than too long. No, I like the length of the season. You think it should be, I would just prefer this length, but 2 games a week.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, if you're going to do it that way, I think the density over this duration of time is another big problem.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like 5 games and 7 nights stretches in an 82 game season is pretty crazy. All right, who we got next here?
Let's go to the East, and a team that we've both been really impressed with, the Atlanta Hawks.
8-2 before tonight against Milwaukee, and this is another one of those teams, you can't just look at their point differential and be like, oh, they're getting lucky in close games. That's not what they're doing. They've been blowing people out. They have played somewhat of an easier schedule. I would say that the Cavs are the only team I recall that's really good that they've played, and they did win in Cleveland, forcing Cleveland's one loss. And yeah, they've been playing like the second best team. 12th in offense, 2nd in defense right now. I'm buying that defense right now because they were this good last year, and I think that Dwight Howard has looked fantastic at his peak. I think he can be even better than Al Horford. They have rejiggered the system a little bit to not trap so much on pick and rolls, but I think against some teams that really works a lot better when you have Dwight back there playing D. They've improved their defensive rebounding, which was a huge weakness from last year, and they're still forcing a ton of turnovers even when they're not trapping quite as much as they did last year. I think actually they're 12th in offense. That's where I would be more concerned about a regression. Dennis Schroeder is shooting 44% on threes. And while I don't want to focus on one player's performance too much, the fact that if he can punish teams going under on the pick and roll, that opens up so much for this team. And then they're also turning the ball over a ton. I don't expect that to really improve that much either. Howard is a high turnover player, so is Schroeder. And some of their backups are a little bit challenged to create their own offense that can lead to more turnovers as well. So I could see them taking a little bit of a step back on offense and maybe slightly on defense, just because teams generally regress to the mean a little bit. But I see them as maybe, you know, mid-pack on offense and 2nd or 3rd best defense. And I think I had them like under their 44 wins or 43 and a half or whatever it was. I'm clearly have adjusted that, especially with the number of wins that they've banked so far. I'm feeling like this is a low 50s win team right now, the way they've been playing.
Low 50s is fair. My concern in terms of their season win total is that they are in a tough spot due to injuries to basically any of their starters.
Yeah, if Dwight gets injured, they're in big trouble. And same thing,
Millsap gets hurt. They don't have a lot of depth at point guard. You know, Delaney, I think Delaney could step up and do pretty well, but then it's how do you fill Delaney's spot? They have a lot of those sorts of issues, and Hawks University hasn't produced the next generation of swingmen yet. They're in the first year of courses, and it takes a little bit longer to get in there if it even works. So that is a concern for the year-long total, but I completely buy this team being this good in terms of, like, let's say, like, mid-pack, elite, in terms of offense and defense, if they're at full strength. I completely buy their defense. Yeah. And what the Hawks were so interesting before the season, because it was kind of an issue of uncertainty, where, like, this was completely one of the reasonable possibilities, but it was that we didn't know, because they had to change their defensive system around. Dwight is just a dramatically different defensive player, also adjusting to Dennis Schroeder instead of Jeff Teague.
Yeah,
and
we
so,
didn't know what Dwight was going to look like either, because he was
right.
so bad.
So you had so what this did for me is it's confirmed a possibility that was always there. This isn't a team that's doing something completely insane. They're doing something that was possible, but you had to price in the possibility that a lot of other things happen. So yeah, I'd probably put them in the low 50s right now, but I'm open to it being mid 50s or high 40s, depending on if they stay healthy.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Also, one thing that could regress for this team is I haven't looked at it since over the weekend, but in the 15 and 60, we pointed out that some of those net ratings on the bench are just just completely insane. Like, yeah. Delaney has like a 25 net rating. Cefalosha is over 20. Like, that can't quite continue. And if that, now you could also say that the starters will do better. Sure, it'll get better than a 1.5 net rating or whatever he was. But if one of those things happens and not the other, then you can, and the bench net rating is absolutely for sure going to regress.
Yeah.
Then you could see them taking a little bit of a step back. But yeah, I mean, this feels like a 50 win team, especially because they've now banked 8 wins.
I want to say one more thing before we move on, that I'm very excited to see what they do in their next about 2 weeks. So they face Charlotte on Friday, which is going to be a big game. It's in Charlotte, just to see how these two teams face off, kind of different strengths and weaknesses. And then at the end of the month, they have a West Coast road trip facing Utah, the Lakers, the Warriors, and the Suns. So there are two games in that they absolutely should win, but whether they go 2-2, 3-1, 4-0 will tell us a lot about how well this team can travel and how good they are as a regular season team, even if I still have questions about them in the playoffs.
Should Brooklyn even be on this list? They're 4-7 now, have the point differential of a 5-6 team. They've been playing okay without Lynn, but then they had two games in LA where they couldn't stop anybody, and now they're back to 21st on defense. The three-point shooting has regressed a little bit. They did have a nice win in Phoenix the other day. They were competitive in that Lakers game, distinctly non-competitive in that Clippers game. I mean, should we even be talking about them at 4-7 as being a surprise right now?
We can give them like a 9 and move on. What has been significant, and this
a
was
9
in terms of repeatability.
Oh, no, it would be a 1 if you think that they can't repeat.
Oh, no, I think they can sustain 4-7.
Oh, you think they can't? Right, yeah.
Yeah, bad. And so one of the elements of this season that I was really intrigued by was the idea that the bottom got better. I mean, we haven't seen it from the Sixers. They've been dealing with a lot of injuries, but the Lakers and the Nets. And so what that has done is fundamentally changed the nature of how far the falling teams can fall. And so one of the big questions is whether the Nets can stay good enough, you know, winning about 35-40% of their games, because they're going to deal with this point guard issue, it sounds like, for a while. That if they can do that, then that fun, you know, then a team like what happened to the Suns last year, maybe instead of falling to 4, that team starts falling into like the 2 spot, whoever that is for this season. And if the Nets can do that, that also increases the chance that they can like weaken the pick that the Celtics are getting.
Yeah, really, there have not been any major injuries yet this year in terms of, I think, all of the top 20 players in the league, basically, correct me if I'm wrong on this, have been like healthy and playing throughout most of the season. Am I right about that? I can't think of anyone who's been out.
Paul George missed a little bit of time, but not very much. Horford's concussion.
Yeah, Horford's concussion might be the only, the Celtics really are probably the only team you could look at.
Oh,
as
and
like,
Gordon
right.
Hayward.
Yeah, I mean, but the Jazz, I guess the Jazz have still been rolling pretty well. And yeah, and Favors, Hill, I mean, the Jazz, it's funny, the Jazz and Celtics have both kept afloat reasonably well, and they've probably been the two most injury hit teams in the league at this point. But back to Brooklyn, I think it's going to be the case that they can't stop anybody. Brook Lopez, if he's kind of on this minutes limit, he's only going to play 25 to 30 minutes a game, high 20s. They've been positive when he was on the floor. When Lynn was able to play, they were positive when he was on the floor, and without those guys they really have been falling apart. One thing that's actually a concern, you remember how Rondae Hollis-Jefferson was a plus minus all-star last year? They're -9 with him on the floor now, can't score when he's out there. Their three-point percentage, they're taking a ton of threes, but that's now down to 32%, and I think teams are going to start to get, oh yeah, these guys only want to shoot threes, and they're going to sell out to stop those a little bit more. They don't have a point guard, they're turning the ball over a ton and not forcing any turnovers on the other end. They're really a bad rebounding team, so they're basically just surviving on math right now. And if teams figure out that that's what they're trying to do and adjust to stop it, and I think it's usually 10 games, 15 games, you'll start to see teams getting a little bit smarter on the scouting report. I think this team, we had them at 24 wins earlier in the season. Yeah, I could see them at like 27, 28 by the time it's all done, but no better than that.
And they have no incentive to tank because of the pick swap, but at the same point, it doesn't really make that big a difference with them.
The Charlotte Hornets are 7-3. Their point differential has been right in line with that. Their SRS with Basketball Reference has been right in line with that. I think the only thing I would point to that may regress for them, they're 11th in offense right now, and they are really, really dependent on what Kemba Walker has been doing. 48% on threes, 42% on long twos, and 62% at the rim, all well above what you would expect him to be doing. Maybe the long twos. Now his jumper looks awesome. He's got a ton of confidence in it. He's not going to keep shooting that well on threes. It certainly has opened things up when you can't go under on him anymore the way you used to be able to in the pick and roll, and that helps. And then also when he's not in the game, I think that it can be a real struggle for them to grind out buckets. I'm buying the defense because MKG is back, Zeller is back, and it's just Steve Clifford has this history now. So I think that if they're not going to stay number four, they could be five or six. I think they'll be right around there. But the offense I worry about slightly.
They've been 11th in offense so far. And even with, you know, the guys that they have with Kemba Walker and everything else, they have some offensive talent. And I don't believe in it, not only because of the starters, but the bench. I feel like this is a team that can erode a little bit on that end as well. And like we talked about with the Hawks, they're very susceptible to injury. Also, they have a lot of guys that have an injury history. So if, you know, if Kemba misses 5 to 10 games, they're going to fall off a cliff. If Batum misses extended time, MKG, of course, has already missed a little bit of time with that back thing, but he's back now and that's great. And so they're, to me, they're a cogent playoff team. I mean, of course, if they get saddled with injuries, they can fall off, but they fit that profile of a team of whether they end up, you know, third or seventh based on health, that they're just going to be in that mix.
Yeah. Marvin Williams and Nick Batum, both of them have regressed from what were outlier seasons for them a year ago, both not shooting nearly as well. That's a little bit of a concern as well. They do never turn the ball over. That helps some for them.
And but that'll Ramon continue because that's always been the way they are.
Yeah. Ramon Sessions has been really bad. Roy Hibbert probably not going to continue to have a 23 PER. That's only in five games. He's missed time with that knee injury. So they're going to have to get some more production somehow offensively from someone other than Walker. I mean, Cody Zeller has been pretty decent offensively, but that's mostly just as a support player. They're going to have to come up with some other guys who can create shots reliably on this team. And maybe that'll be Batum. Maybe Sessions will get better, but it's not looking great so far for them. So they could take a little bit of a step back. I'm thinking this team still is more kind of not a 50-win team, which is the pace that they're on. They've also had an easier schedule. I'm thinking they're more 47, 48 wins, kind of right around where they were last year, with some potential even to take a step back from there if the injuries hit.
That seems fair.
So I would say sustainability, it's probably like a six.
Yeah, I'd give it a seven for almost the same reason.
Yeah. So we're going to get to another surprising team, the Chicago Bulls, who had a wonderful win last night. But first, a word from Betterment. You can learn more about them at betterment.com/capspace. And basically, what's good about Betterment is it's automated investing at a lower cost than traditional financial services. They offer a number of neat products like a tax impact preview that'll show you how any transaction you're going to do is going to affect your taxes. They have smart deposit where if your bank account gets above a certain level, let's say $5,000, it'll automatically invest it for you. That's great for people who are in freelance gigs, don't necessarily have a regular income. And you can find out more about them at betterment.com/capspace. A link at which Dunked On listeners can get up to 6 months of no fees. So learn more about that. Betterment.com/capspace. Betterment, investing made better. Chicago Bulls, 7-4 after a massive win in Portland last night, which we talked about. I mean, we're recording this on Wednesday, so it was last night. What are your thoughts on them and how well they can sustain this start? We thought of them as really a slightly below 500 team coming into the season.
Their offense has been way better than I expected. Their defense has been way better than I expected. And so that kind of means two things at one time. One, their median outcome for the rest of the season is probably between those two things. So that would mean a much better season than we anticipated. But I do not expect this to continue. I mean, so they're 8th in offense, but they're 18th in true shooting percentage, which kind of gives you an idea of where this team is getting their offense. And they are getting more in transition than I expected. And part of that is due to their outperforming expectations defensively.
Yeah, they're also getting more possessions on the offensive glass. First in offensive rebound rate. They destroyed the Blazers on the offensive boards, Robin Lopez and Taj Gibson. While they don't provide a ton of spacing, there are guys like Butler and Wade will get to the basket, and then that opens up the offensive glass. They've been able to just get some little cheapy post-ups against smaller players with Lopez and Gibson as well. And then defensively, the only thing they're really that good at, and you mentioned they're 9th in defense, is they never foul at all. And that's going to come down a little bit, but they are first in percentage of free throws given up, only average on the defensive glass, not forcing any turnovers. Again, that always happens to Robin Lopez defenses. And also if you have like a Doug McDermott in there, that's not going to help you too much either. And then they're about league average in field goal percentage. And I think offensively Wade, well, yeah, any comments on their defense?
When I watch them, I don't really see this kind of stifling thing. Usually when a team is a top 10 defense, you're getting these kind of like trademarks of, oh, they're really doing a good job stopping stopping this or whatever. And I don't see a lot of those through lines. And those are the types of teams that I think are going to regress. Do you happen to remember? I'm trying to think of how well opponents are shooting from three against them. But I feel like when I've watched them, they've had a lot of these kind of anomalous games like they did against the Blazers. And, you know, if you have enough of those, then maybe there's something to it. But generally speaking, that gets back to normal.
Yeah, their opponent 3-point percentage actually has been below average. They're 23rd in that statistic. Opponents shooting 35.7% against them. So that's not something that you would necessarily point to. And I think another thing that comes to mind here for me is that when they've had certain players on the floor, they've really been outstanding, with Gibson 9.2 net rating, Butler 7.7, Mirotić 7.2. And then they've been in the negative with Rondo and the negative with Bobby Portis. Those are the two rotation slots that I've really been critical of Fred Hoiberg for. And that's because neither of those guys are good defenders. The Bulls have a 97 defensive rating when Rondo is on the bench. And Portis, they've really been killing Portis too, because he's been playing pretty much exclusively with Mirotić, and there's just no way that defensive front court is going to stop anybody. I don't know why Portis still has earned this spot in the rotation over Felicio. There was just one good comeback that they had in that Celtics game where he was on the floor and wasn't even necessarily doing that much, and just really a frustrating defender. So I would like to see them go back to Felicio. I'd like to see them reduce Rondo's role. Obviously, that great win in Portland was without Rondo. We'll see whether either of those things can happen politically. But if they do, I think I really like what this team can do. I don't think that they're some juggernaut. I mean, but I could see them as playing like a sixth seed, fifth seed, maybe even getting into the fourth seed conversation.
I think that's the best case scenario for them. I'm thinking more low end of the playoff picture, but that's a whole heck of a lot better than we were saying before the season.
Yeah, that's right. And much has been made of Wade's 3-point shooting. That's actually, he's down to 35% now after a couple of rough games from out there. And his overall true shooting percentage is 52. I think it is a little bit of a concern that they have not played well when he's been out there without Butler, and also that he's just going to continue to have this huge usage rate. But nonetheless, he does provide some offense at, you know, a little bit less than league average shooting efficiency. And they're going to just, I think, be solid. There's also the injury question as well. Like, if Butler were to miss time, I think they'd be in massive, massive trouble. Wade, never incredibly healthy. But nobody else really who's got, like, a huge injury history at this point on this team, now that Noah and Rose are out of the picture. Yeah. So, yeah, I would say I would put it at, like, a 5 for them in terms of sustainability.
I was going to go 4. There's a lot here that they have to keep up, and they probably won't keep all of it up, but there are some fundamentals that are solid.
The Milwaukee Bucks, 5-4. Before tonight's game against Atlanta, they have had an easier schedule. They're below the league median in SRS, despite that 5-4 record. Haven't taken any big road trips yet. But I think the two things to look at with them: 14th in offense, 10th in defense. Let's start with the defense. I think that's probably the most encouraging thing. Do you think that can sustain at the level it's been at?
Probably not. They have a lot of athletes, but they did make the change that they needed to, which was taking Greg Monroe out of the lineup and having somebody, even, you know, Miles Plumlee, John Henson, who can do a better job of cleaning up messes, and that can be enough. But they just, I think also the offense is going to get worse, and that's the type of thing that will hurt the defense a little bit. But I've been encouraged by, you know, Giannis being kind of a weak side shot blocker, getting some of that out there, and they are getting closer to finding a balance, but 10th is strong.
Yeah, it is. They are first in opponent 3-point percentage by a mile, I think 31%. That's going to regress a little bit. The one thing is, it looks like they've fixed their defensive rebounding woes from last year. That's important. They're one of the worst defensive rebounding teams in the league. I think they're right around a little bit even above average this year. So that helps. On offense, they are 19th in 3-point attempt rate, which is a massive improvement from last in the league by a mile, which they were last year. Not hitting at a particularly solid rate. I mean, Giannis has been shooting really poorly. Tony Snell is in the 20s. Dellavedova is in the low 30s for them. So we'll see whether the 3-point shooting, at least in terms of number of attempts, can keep up, because that spaces the floor more for guys like Giannis and Jabari and Greg Monroe to get to the cup. I'm buying it a little bit, also just because Giannis and Jabari look better. I think they've improved more than we thought they would. And that's been really what's been driving a lot of their improvement so far. I could still see them taking a step back on both ends. I think they're more in the 35 win range. I had them more around like 31, 32 before the season started. And again, they have banked these wins, which helps a little bit. But I'm not ready to talk about them as being in the playoffs quite yet.
I'm not either. And it's also worth noting that with Middleton out, they are very susceptible. If anything happens to Giannis, if anything happens to Jabari, they're so dependent on those two guys offensively that they would be basically it would be unplayable kind of at that point unless one of those guys
They have a lot of center depth.
A lot of expensive center depth, but that's kind of a problem though. Is they also Dellavedova, you know, not any great shakes, but still incredibly dependent on him just because their depth there is bad. And so guys like Brogdon, I think Brogdon's done better than expectations, but they won't have guys that can take on that larger role. So if they can stay healthy, I can buy them getting into, you know, high 30s, maybe low 40s, but you never expect that for a full season. So I'm with you with the, you know, 35, maybe like 33 kind of win range, which would still be, you know, be a fine season for them considering they should be much better next year than they are this year.
Yeah, and you have to say that just about any of these teams that's doing really well so far, almost none of them have dealt with injuries. And so you have to expect a little bit of natural regression even from that, not to mention the performance. The Toronto Raptors, 7-3 before tonight's game against Golden State. People have been focusing on DeMar DeRozan. I agree, he's going to regress. That seemed like that started against the Cavs last night. But that's balanced out by the fact that the rest of the team up until last night had been horrible on three-pointers. The bigger concern for me, so they're third in offense right now. That seems a little high to me, though, still, with this level of talent. Do you agree with that?
I do, and they certainly have guys, but third in offense, you know, generally you're speaking, that's pretty rarefied air. But if they go, let's say, somewhere in the 5-8 range, I think that would certainly be possible, but maybe they could even, that seems about right.
I think that'll happen for sure. I would be shocked if this team finishes lower than eighth in offense, and even probably lower than sixth or seventh. I think they have that level of talent. They were fifth last year, and then the year before that, they were fourth. So this would be right in line. And unless Lowry is going to fall off a cliff, like there's no reason to think that they would be so much worse. And even probably someone like Bebe is probably a better offensive player than Biombo was last year. The defense, I can't say that about, though. They are 15th in defense. And, you know, I think that seems about right to me. That could even get worse because I'm just not sure where the defense comes from on this team. Valanciunas is too slow. DeRozan, we've talked about many times, is an awful defender. Lowry is pretty good, but he and Norman Powell are kind of out there by themselves. Damari Carroll has taken a step back. Their centers, I don't really trust them as backups to provide the type of defense that they did last year. Like, they can put some okay defensive lineups out there, but I think that those guys are not playing quite enough, and also missing Biombo this year is going to be a concern. So I could see them right around just average in defense this year, and if the offense takes a step back, I could see them going a little bit worse than they were last year. But they still feel like a low 50s win team to me, and I think I had them at 49, so feeling a little bit better about them than I did. And again, another team that's banked some wins here.
They've banked wins, and their three losses are significant because they lost twice to the Cavs. So, you know, the best team in the conference.
And played them closely, not to the point where you're convinced about them doing that in the playoffs.
And then that weird game against the Kings when DeMarcus Cousins went crazy, Valanciunas didn't play. So you look at that and can say, okay, you know, they've won the games that they should win, and teams deserve credit for that early in the season. But we're going to see, you know, by the time this airs, we will have seen the game against the Warriors, and it'll be clarifying to see whether they can kind of win more of those against challenging opponents. It is on their home floor, but the overall kind of structure, if we're going to say, you know, third in offense, 15th in defense, I think that's going to stay relatively close. But I also don't feel that that is necessarily conducive to a 7-3 record is strong for that. So I think they'll maintain about that, but they'll fall off a little bit just in terms of the pace.
I want to talk a little bit about Oklahoma City too before we go, because they were on this list for me, and I was going to rank them very highly as a regression candidate just based on point differential and the fact that their offense has been pretty rough. And then I think they lost what, 4 out of 5 now or something like that.
I believe so.
Yeah, and they're playing Houston tonight. They are now at a -1.4 net rating for the season, and they had that great road win to give the Clippers their only loss. But it's just, if this team doesn't play amazing defense and play with amazing effort, they're not going to be that good. And they're 24th in offense right now, I think. And I don't really see how that gets much better, frankly.
Their bench can improve when they get campaign back. They've struggled a lot.
Yeah,
with
that's
Westbrook,
a great point, actually.
With Westbrook off the floor, if they can get to passable, let's say, at those minutes, that would be enough to kind of prop them up a little bit, maybe make up for some of the regression that they'll go through. Seventh in defense is too, I think that's too strong for me. It could be close. They have these weird patches of just horrendous defense, and generally teams can't survive that and be top 10, especially because their peak is good, but not just insane. So if that moves down to, let's say, 12.
And their 15, bench has some awful defenders on it, too.
Yes, it does. Especially when the team often plays Enes Kanter and Joffrey LaVerne as your backup big men. They will struggle defensively. And Payne could be better. They have a lot of these kind of athletic guys. And one problem I have with Oklahoma City is figuring out how to combine their backup players into a functional lineup. You know, if they're going to play Sabonis, Robertson, Oladipo, and all that, you know, their starting lineup, it's fine. It's not as good as it was last year for obvious reasons, but they can do well. But, you know, you can't really play Jeremy Grant at the three. The guy can't shoot. LaVerne and Kanter is a problem. You know, all those kind of things together, and they just don't have enough swingman depth to work everything else out. They have all these guys that have kind of been like an island of misfit toys, whether that be Singler and Morrow, or just kind of doing all that. And it's not like they're starting guys. You want to really give them a ton of minutes other than Russ in the season. So I feel like it's going to take a step back. And, you know, maybe they're like on a fringe playoff team, somewhere between 6 and 9 in the conference seems about fair to me.
Yeah, that's about right. And I had them, I think, at 44 wins. I might even reduce that slightly at this point. I mean, this is going against somewhat the premise of the show here, but I actually have seen enough from them despite the 6-5 record that I think I feel a little bit worse about them than I did going into the season, because I just don't see how they're going to be able to compete with elite teams very often unless they just have a great defensive night. And by the way, I mean, I know they lost Serge Ibaka, but they did get Oladipo back, who was theoretically better than anyone they had at the two last year. Kevin Durant's pretty good. This team was like second in offense last year, right? And now they're 24th. And they kind of relied on him a lot more to paper over some of these guys like Robertson that were totally limited.
Well, especially because of the way that you have to defend Durant and that he's a constant pressure. And I was intrigued by how well the Thunder played with only one of Westbrook and Durant on the floor last year offensively. I actually wrote about that for The Athletic before the start of the season. And, you know, they've done all right when Russ has been on the floor, but they haven't been able to continue everything.
That's true. Yeah, they have like still a 6 net rating when he's been out there. Sure. And then they're just getting crushed when he's out of the game.
Yeah, so that'll certainly help. But the Thunder, I mean, can you think about what they'll be if Russ misses 5 to 10 games even?
No, I don't want to think about that.
Yeah, I don't either. But it's going to be rough. And Adams, you know, Adams is a good player. I like him a lot. We talked a little bit about him earlier in the season, but he's not good enough to carry a team right now. And Oladipo, I think, has the confidence to do that, but doesn't have the skill at this point.
All right, we're done here?
Well, let's do some news, because this is the last one we're going to do this week.
Okay, what do we got?
So Kevin O'Connor of The Ringer did a kind of a compilation piece of various little nuggets of news on what could be in the next collective bargaining agreement. The ones that stood out to me were a potentially shorter preseason.
Thank God.
Which would be both in number of games and duration. And what that would open the door for is an earlier start to the regular season. So as much as I would like to see them reduce the number of games from 82, that is the next best thing, because at least then you can play him. If you add another week or maybe even a little bit more than that to the schedule, it reduces back-to-backs further and a lot of that kind of stuff. So that's a big one. And then the expanded definition of BRI is a great, it's not even really a compromise, but it's a great way of resolving this issue with BRI. And so basically, what O'Connor's report, what his reporting had was that there were elements of BR, of elements of revenue that the teams were getting related to NBA activities that the players didn't have in the BR, in BRI. And so when their accountants, and I'm assuming some lawyers, went through the CBA, they found some things. And so those are being included.
Billy, Billy Hunter didn't do a great job of making sure that the NBA was including all the revenue in BRI. I'm shocked.
This is my surprised face. But that's important because it grows the pie overall. And so that keeps the number the same, but it grows the pie that the players can get. So it's the kind of compromise that I'm sure the owners are okay with, especially considering they probably, and I don't mean this in a sinister way, got away with a little bit last time.
Yeah, any business, you're negotiating, you're trying to get what you can. The Players Association had the right to kind of audit this stuff. They collectively bargained it. I don't think that the owners were cheating in terms of what was collectively bargained. It was just that the definition of BRI maybe wasn't as expansive. And if that's included, and don't worry, the owners still have plenty of kind of off the books sources of revenue, like the value of the team, the tax benefits of owning a team with respect to
the stadium stuff,
other businesses. Yeah. And all that, I think they'll survive here. But one thing too is, like, if this expanded definition of BRI just pushes it up maybe, you know, another million or two per team, then that's going to increase the cap by about basically 44.74% of that. So that's something where we might get a little more breathing room for some of these teams now in 2017 and beyond as a result of this. That's probably the biggest on-court difference that might result from this. There's also going to be a more detailed domestic violence policy, which I think was needed when you had Jeff Taylor getting suspended for 24 games in the post-Ray Rice climate, and then Darren Collison only 8. And again, I'm not saying that I know the details of those, that they're the same, but it does lead to a little bit of an issue there of, all right, you know, how consistent is this going to be? Like, do we know what the rules are? There's kind of been this ad hoc change to it as domestic violence rightfully became a much more important issue. Also, O'Connor noted that a new deal is expected by that December 15th opt-out date. That's going to help. And I think that's all that he had there.
Are you ready to block off a week of sometime in December to go through this new CBA?
That'll actually be a good time because my girlfriend's going to be in Chicago doing this yoga training. So I will have absolutely nothing else to do besides that and this podcast and the Twitter NBA show.
Yeah, that's true. You don't have any writing obligations. But so let's go through a little bit of injury news. A little bit of Nuggets news is probably the better way of talking about it. Gary Harris has a foot injury. He's going to be out for up to 4 weeks. That means Jamal Murray is going to have a much larger role. This all ties in with the idea of the Nuggets having a little bit below expectation season, but still showing
some... Yeah, that's actually a team that's been hurt by injuries. Should have mentioned. I mean, they could have been 5-2 at one point, and now they're on a bit of a losing streak. Despite the fact that they've had, again, some great moments in games, like they went up by 17 at Portland, I think on Sunday night, ended up losing that one. Now Will Barton hopefully will be back soon for them with that sprained ankle. That'll help a little bit, but Harris is really their best two-way guy, and also they have plenty of guys who like the ball in their hands. Harris doesn't necessarily need that. He can shoot threes, he can defend, so I think he is their best option still to start at the two. It'll be nice to see some more Jamal Murray. I've really have enjoyed what I've seen from him at times, just aesthetically. I mean, he hasn't been close to
an effective player yet.
His passing is good. His jump shot is really versatile. He's just got a lot of moves. I really enjoy that. Can't defend a potted plant at this moment, but again, I for my own aesthetic enjoyment, I like it when he comes on the floor. Wancho has been really good too. I've been enjoying him taking a spot in the rotation.
Well, and that ties in with the other Nuggets news, which is that they waived Jarnell Stokes and they added in, it looks like, Alonzo G. Sean Strania is reporting that. And it always was weird to me that Stokes made the team, not because of his own quality, but because of the sheer amount of big men that the Nuggets have. I mean, this is a team that starts 2 7-footers and still has more than enough guys to fill out their rotation. They even didn't have enough space for Joffrey Laverne, who they traded for second round picks. And so Stokes made the team. Kudos to him for that. But he never really, there wasn't a place for him. And it's more of a luxury to have that. And they now, especially with Gary Harris being out, they need swingman depth. Alonzo G can hopefully help that.
I don't think he can, but
I was trying to be rosy and optimistic considering we just talked about Gary Harris being out for a month.
Yeah, I guess they do need someone who's a defensive specialist on the wing now that they don't have. But G has just been so bad as an offensive player, just not at all a threat from three-point range. And he's actually older than you think, too. I think he might, if he's not 30, he's like 29 at this point. So his athleticism is probably on the wane. But good to see him back in the league, at least after he got waived by the Hornets for Lance Stephenson, who then, of course, suffered that groin injury and had to be waived himself. Last thing, more surprising news that unfortunately is not a surprise in the slightest. Brandon Wright out at least 2 months with an ankle debridement. Another kind of weird, shadowy guy has an injury, doesn't ever get any better, and then has to have another surgery situation with Memphis.
Yeah, unfortunate in a lot of different ways. The silver lining, if we want to call it that, is that their young bigs have played better this year, so they're not missing him as much as I expected. Deontay Davis had some nice stretch. They have Jarrell Martin now that they're playing Jermichael Green with the starting lineup, but he still would have been a guy who could help them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that his shot blocking, his ability to roll down on the lane, he could have been, especially with them trying to limit Marc Gasol's minutes, a nice partner to play some with Mike Conley and some of the other starters where they could space the floor and really try to go to a more offensive group. But I mean, and he's been out basically, this will have been a year and a half that he's been out. By the time he comes back, knee injuries, ankle, he's had a lot of injuries in his career. I mean, he's been around, hard to remember, but he was in that 2007 draft. You probably remember.
Traded for Jason Richardson.
All that being the case, you wonder whether he's even going to be like remotely the same guy when he actually does come back, which, you know, if that happens at this point, right? I mean, 2 months, we know that these Grizzlies timetables a lot of times have not been proven to be accurate.
With someone with his skill set, I would love to see, you know, him take some time off, get as close to right as he can, and just see him kind of have that small role on a good team where, you know, like he has no pressure to perform. Like, let's say the fifth center spot for the Warriors. And it's like, if he can perform for 5-10 minutes a game, like 20 games in the year, and then you use that, I would love to see him in that kind of a role just to see if it can work out, considering some of the weird guys that get flyers taken on him, but he's going to have to prove it physically.
All right, now we are done here. You got anything to plug before we go?
Sure. I will have, by the time this airs, I'll have material on the Warriors-Raptors game. Going to do Locked On Warriors, and then, you know, the two pieces for The Athletic. And also, earlier in the week, I recorded a fun podcast with Ben Golliver of Sports Illustrated. Went through a lot of the league stories. Some of them that we talked about today with the surprises, and kind of went through the season so far. So you can listen to that. It's on Real Jam Radio.
That'll do it for today. Don't forget to watch the Twitter NBA show as well. You can find it on my Periscope at Nate Duncan NBA, or we'll have tweeted it out many times. I've actually got it as the headline on my Twitter right now as well. And we will be back tomorrow with a fun episode with Kevin Pelton talking about the Hall of Fame prospects for all the players who are currently in the league. Sorry, I forgot about you, Paul Pierce, but KP was nice enough to remind me of it. That'll do it for today. Talk to y'all next time.